Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 100 of the show where we talk aviation. Hooray. I'm Max Flight. Co-hosting, as usual, is Rob Mark. Hello, Rob.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to whistle. I was pretty excited, though. Hello, everybody.
It is very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Also with us, of course, is Dan Webb. Hi, Dan.
Hello, everyone, and greetings from Washington, D.C., where I'm spending my entire summer. So, cool stuff.
And you started the new job, huh? Or the summer job.
Yes. Sitting next to John Astrower, the great one. It's been a fun week.
Has he been living up to his reputation?
Yes, and this is true coworker love right here. He took a metal hanger and made an iPad stand for me.
Coworker love. I don't think we need to go any further than that, Max.
but I felt at home when I walked into the office for the first time, because you know you live in a dorky, you work in a dorky office, rather, when you walk into the break room and there's a CRJ 700 model sitting on the coffee machine.
Oh, excellent. Okay, also with us is David Vanderhoof, our official Airplane Geeks historian. Hi, David.
Good evening and happy 100th, gentlemen.
A pretty exciting moment for all of us, I think. But to help commemorate this 100th episode of the Airplane Geeks podcast, we have with us Courtney Miller. He's really the creator of the Airplane Geeks concept and co-hosted the first, 51 episodes, I think. Is that right, Courtney?
That's probably about right. Max, who let all these clowns on the show? You know, I leave for a little bit, I turn around and come back, and what happened?
It's all gone to hell.
Let's be serious. That's the key. You left.
That is left the key. Us. And you know what? You know what? Left there wasn't us. Even a blip in the ratings. So, Max, we know where the show comes from.
Yeah, well.
It's Dan.
No, but seriously, where would we be without Max? I was trying to edit my segment from last week that took it was 20 minutes long, and it took me hours. Like, Max, how do you turn out an episode in two nights?
Skill.
Well, I hide away. My wife doesn't see me, and I spend hours and hours working. Courtney remembers doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations, everybody, even myself. 100 episodes really is fantastic, especially when you consider that it's pretty darn near 2 years.
Right.
But the editing is, well, if you figure that there's at least an hour, now it's up to about an hour and a half worth of audio.
Right.
It's at least that much editing, right? But then you have the actual editing.
Yes.
But Courtney, you have to emphasize the fact that we all have about an hour and a half's worth of outtakes per episode too for Max to edit out.
Usually that's the best part of the show.
Point. And you know, when you add Rob to the equation, now you're tripling the outtakes.
Yeah, that's right.
It just takes yes. I can tell this man has been spending a lot of time talking to those people in Sydney.
You know,
hey dear.
I gotta say,
okay. I'm just sitting back enjoying this. I mean, it's going to take an awful lot to get me riled up tonight.
Well, I think we can arrange that. That shouldn't be too tough.
I must say that Max, I had two concerns when I did leave the show.
Yeah.
The first was the editing workload.
Right.
And my concern wasn't that you would stop, but that you would do too much.
Turn it
and
into
the
a 10
second,
minute podcast.
And I got to be honest with Rob and Dan, yeah. You guys were all so busy. I mean, Rob, I think you were in Paris the last time on my last episode. If not, then you were on your way to Brazil or something like that.
Right, yeah.
And Dan was all over the country and taking the final exams. But gosh, here we are. You added David. Fantastic. And you know, we're another 50 episodes later, so a total of 100. It's really quite fascinating that people have any interest in listening to what we
well, to be honest, I mean, look, in the past 2 years, our listeners have gone up 100%. Granted, it was from 1 to 2, but
yeah.
But actually, random fact, because I did dedicate some time to this, and I do have an Excel spreadsheet with the math.
Yeah.
But if... let's get some guesses here. If you were to listen to all 99 episodes from beginning to end with no breaks, how long do you think it would take you?
More than Rob's lifetime.
120 hours.
Oh, I bet it's more than that.
Actually, Courtney, very close. 123.29 hours, which comes out to about 5 days, 3 hours.
See, guys, don't ever question the creator.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Wow. which is only half true, because I know we've told the story a ton of times, but me creating was just emailing Max.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then he said, yeah, sure, we can do this, this, and this. And I was like, okay, great. You actually sound like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and we weren't even sure this was going to work.
No, we're not even sure it has.
Yeah.
And Courtney, to get me on the show was pretty much the same thing. I sent you an email, and look at what happened.
You know what, though? I think this is a good teaching moment about the industry, but about the podcast. And that's just, look, people, you need to send emails. And lots of them, because who knows? You could be wasting hours of a Sunday night weekly chatting with these guys. But that's true. I mean, that's the way
it is. Yeah.
That Max and I hooked up to do the show. That's how David came to be. Dan, you know what? You and I sent emails years before the Airplane Geeks, didn't we?
Yes, it was when back in the Airline Empires days.
Way back.
I think I offered to do some things for you that I still haven't done. Actually.
Yeah, and I don't think I have either. And then Max contacted Rob. I'm pretty sure you were on episode 8, Rob. I figured it out.
And that story found me in the street. And look at where I am today.
In the street with a microphone.
In the street with a microphone. That's right. Yes.
And a Mac.
Yes, finally. You're right. And I have upgraded, baby.
Oh, also, I just wanted to do one other thing. With that Excel data, I did pop it into a chart and ran a regression on it, because the episodes have gotten longer over the time, so we can predict the length of the episodes with the equation y equals 0.4604x plus 48.066. So by the time we reach episode 200, we'll be running about 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, my God.
You want to know the worst part of that, Dan?
What?
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah,
I followed that perfectly. And I'm embarrassed.
All right. Well, we're going to reminisce a little bit about some of the major milestones in the history of this podcast in a little bit. But first, we're going to start out with the aviation news, as we always do.
And as always, I have yet to read the articles.
Wonderful. Glad to hear you're prepared. I hope you do a little bit better in school than you do for the podcast.
Actually, random fact, I put more time blogging in this past semester than any past semester. And my GPA went up.
There you go.
That's intriguing.
Regress that.
Yeah, really.
4.0 for the first time.
Well done, man.
All right. We're also going to have coming up David's This Week in Aviation. And of course, it wouldn't be an Airplane Geeks episode without the Australia Desk report from Steve and Grant.
Another great example of sending an email and finding yourself in this dysfunctional
creating an empire.
Right. First, though, we have this.
Hi, this is Martin Rotler, aviation educator, blogger at martinrotler.com, and two-time Airplane Geek. I'd like to extend my congratulations to Max, Rob, David, and Dan on your 100th episode. Here's to 100 more insightful, funny, and fact-filled episodes, plus many more rainbows and unicorns to make Dan happy. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah, that was...
Somebody explain to me the stupid rainbows and unicorns thing. I never got that.
Dan brought that up on a... episode a long time ago.
Are those on your pillow, Dan?
It was the very first episode with Martin. Dan came up with some highfalutin dream where the universe was perfect and Virgin Atlantic flight attendants were on every airplane, and Martin just said, wow, that's just a dream of rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, that's right.
Can I say that since I've moved to Canada, that is the first time I've heard the words highfalutin? And I really miss that. So thank you, David.
All right.
You're welcome, Court.
All right, you guys ready for a little news?
Certainly.
Our first item comes from a Department of Transportation press release. This is DOT proposes additional consumer protection for air travelers. The U.S. Transportation Secretary, Ray LaHood, says airline passengers have rights and should be able to expect fair and reasonable treatment when they fly. He goes on, with this rulemaking, we're proposing to strengthen the consumer protections enacted last month, which is the tarmac delay rules, and raise the bar for airlines when it comes to treating passengers fairly. So the DOT is taking on a serious role here in terms of consumer protection or consumer rights for for air travelers. And these new proposals include things like compensation for, or the increased compensation for being involuntarily bumped from a flight, things like the ability to cancel your reservation within 24 hours without penalty, full disclosure of baggage fees, including things like refunds or reimbursement when your bags are not delivered on time. So this is a pretty broad sweeping proposal here. I think this is an interesting role for the DOT.
Just a couple, there's a list of, what, about six of these specific changes that they're looking to make. The first is, increased compensation for passengers involuntarily bumped from flights. Okay, fair enough.
Sure.
The next one I have a real problem with, actually. Allow passengers to make and cancel reservations within 24 hours without penalty.
But a lot of the airlines already do that, though.
Well, okay, but fair enough, right? But allow them to self-regulate that. And here's my reason. Isn't this screwing with the entire revenue management system?
Hmm.
How are you supposed to schedule an airline without even knowing who's going to show up?
Yeah, I think that the make reservations within 24 hours without penalty, that's kind of a tough one.
I'm not sure if it's within 24 hours of departure. The way I see it, it's kind of just like the existing policies that all airlines have is, if I book a flight and then go, oh, wait, I screwed up, that I can cancel it within that 24
hours. Within 24 hours.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the right way to read it, though.
Ah, okay.
That's the way I read it, too. And they need to regulate that. Why?
Well, that's a good point. Why?
Well, my comment was, does this cancel? If you make a reservation within 24 hours and without penalty, does that mean you get to dodge secondary screening? Because that sure as hell is one big penalty.
Yeah,
they call that the penalty box.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other one, there's one that I really, really liked, and that is require fair price advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am so sick of these plus taxes and fees that are added onto every fare, and especially up here in Canada.
Yeah,
because there is a little travel agency called Flight Center up here, and the dyslexic people that they are, they swap the R and the E on center. It's C-N-T-R-E. But if you look at some of their advertised fares, and allow me to just stand on my soapbox for a little bit. A flight from Toronto to Orlando, round trip, $19.
Okay.
Plus $233 in taxes. How is that legal?
Yeah.
And the list goes on. Punta Cana, $49. Plus $329 in taxes. What taxes are there that are, what is that? That's like 700%.
Yeah, but that's Canadian tax.
Yes, Canadian tax.
Yeah, so it's like metric. There's a metric conversion.
You guys have a whole different system.
That's only like 600% taxes in the States.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I think Toronto just has some weird ass fees. That's a tech, like, I know. Actually, let me rephrase that. Max, edit that out. But I think, like, just out of Toronto, there's some weird fees. Because I remember when
Dan Webbage at Twitter.com.
But I remember you used to do that, Dan, and I would just write down on a piece of paper, at this time, make sure you leave it in.
Because I think when Cranky Flyer broke down the fare for Virgin America to Toronto, for the total fare from Los Angeles to Toronto, there's like a $25 Toronto airport improvement fee.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that, which is why we drive to Buffalo.
Yeah.
But okay, so I totally understand that it's outside the scope of even the article since it is DOT. But didn't Delta and AirTran just have some issue with their price, advertising fare prices?
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, maybe Steve Vischer can give us some insight on this. If I'm not mistaken, in the Commonwealth country of Australia, you have to advertise all taxes rounded up into the price.
Hmm.
Ooh.
Well, for me, it doesn't matter too much if they're in the price by mandate, but what should be required is that all the taxes, all the fees, they ought to be visible. I mean, I don't have any problem with a variety of business models, that are based on a la carte pricing versus, full up pricing. That's fine as far as I'm concerned. An airline can do it the way they want. But the consumer ought to be able to tell what the total price is going to be by one means or another. So if this addresses that, then I'm in favor of it.
You know, actually, I was down at a low-cost carriers conference this past week over in Miami, and there was a lot of talk about this from a few different airlines. And there are a couple of U.S. airlines saying that they want to rework their websites to make it more transparent, especially with so many ancillary services. And apparently, there were a lot of comparisons to an Amazon that basically you'll go through your purchase, your normal purchase process, and then at the end you'll see this like an Amazon shopping cart and see exactly every single item you've purchased plus the taxes. So it's all broken down and more transparent.
Which is fine, but when I buy a ticket, and again, it's just more exaggerated up here, right? Because Canada likes to tax the crap out of its people. Just so we make that clear.
You socialists.
And I feel better. I feel better having said that and having put my paycheck away.
Yeah.
What's left of it anyways.
Right.
But, you know, if I buy a $99 ticket, congratulations. Oh, enter your credit card. Oh, and by the way, here's your $110 in taxes. So it's going to be $209. But No, that's not what you said.
Yeah.
That's the direction they want you to cognitively take, right? They want you to be like, oh, well, I'm already three quarters of the way through the process. I might as well just pay it anyway.
Yeah, sure. That's exactly what they're trying to do. You know, obfuscate the full total price that you're going to see at the end.
Max, I really thought I was raising the bar with cognitive, but you totally trumped me. Obfuscate.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Do you like that, huh?
Well done.
Well, you know, this press release also contains a couple of interesting links, I think. One is to another DOT page with more information, more specifics about some of these proposals. As I read through that, one that really caught my eye was actually, this is item 12 on that list, peanut allergies. Now, get this. What they're looking for is to solicit comments on three options to provide greater access to air travel for persons with peanut allergies. One, ban the serving of peanuts and all peanut products by both U.S. and foreign carriers on flights covered by DOT's disability rule. And I'm not sure what the DOT disability rule is, but that's a ban on peanuts. Second option, ban the serving of peanuts and all peanut products on all such flights where a passenger with a peanut allergy is on board and has requested a peanut free flight in advance.
Option number two, by the way, that's what Southwest does.
Is that right?
Yes, and they're basically, I think, the only airline left that serves peanuts
straight up.
Well, they're the only ones that'll give them to you for free, I think, right now.
The third option is to create a peanut-free buffer zone in the immediate area of a passenger with a medically documented severe allergy to peanuts if passenger has requested a peanut-free flight in advance.
Would that be the peanut gallery or...
Yeah. Well done, Rob.
Yeah, very good.
I'm surprised they haven't done this already. In fact, I was kind of surprised to see that they were even discussing it now because I thought it had already gone in. Maybe it's for reasons that Dan already said. But, you know, I flew with a captain one time who had peanut allergies. And during the briefing, he said, if you would, don't eat any peanuts up here. And I kind of laughed because I thought he was just kidding. But no, he said, even if you open the bag, it's enough to, he gets the coughs and his mouth itches, I guess, or whatever, and nose starts running. But he says he can tell if somebody in the cabin opens a bag of peanuts. And that's a deadly, deadly allergy.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's the worst. I think of the food allergies, the peanut allergy is the worst. I mean, it can be fatal to people.
So there must have been a whole lot of people dying from peanut allergies 30 years ago, I guess, right? Because you never heard much about it until 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, it seems to be a recent phenomenon. I don't know if that means that people didn't have these kinds of allergies in the past or they did. And
I think it is growing. And of course, you know, now we're getting into topics that we don't know anything about. But my wife is
more
teacher.
Reason to speak about
yeah,
it.
Exactly. So we can say all we want. My wife is a teacher and they are seeing increasing cases in the schools because, of course, you know, if one kid has a peanut allergy in class, none of the kids can have anything with peanuts in them.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're right.
They're, no, it's very disruptive to them, but they're noticing an increase. So, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Well, my while we're on the medical topics, Dr. Courtney, I have this really weird rash.
Oh, we don't want to hear about your rash.
And since Skype supports video teleconferencing now.
No.
Unable.
There's one other interesting link in this press release, and this is to something called regulationroom.org. And this is apparently a pilot program where people can comment, the public can comment on proposed rules. So if you go to regulationroom.org, at least right now, it's focused on entirely on airline passenger rights. The site gives you the ability to, you know, submit comments and provide your input. So if you are interested in this topic, tootle over to regulationroom.org and you can actually become part of the process yourself.
Max, you went from obfuscate to tootle?
Yeah. I sort of regressed.
No, I like that website because you always could, you know, write letters to the DOT about a specific docket, but this seems to make things a lot more user-friendly. But one other thing I like to point out in the press release was one proposed idea is requiring airlines to disclose if passengers will have to pay for the first two bags. So I'm sure everyone at Love Field began salivating once they saw that line in the press release.
Okay, before we move on to our next story, we have this from Evan.
Hi, I'm Evan from evanflies.com, and I want to congratulate Airplane Geeks on 100 great episodes.
Now, you'll recall Evan is an amazing, at least I think he was 12. He is totally amazing. Evan is the guy that does interviews with airshow performers, warbird pilots, things like that. And he's been doing, in conjunction with his father, he's been doing some more videos and things like that lately. So it's really fun to follow along with Evan as he sort of progresses through life centered around aviation. It's just amazing to see someone so young do such great work.
So what we need to do is find out where he gets his funding from.
I think that's probably Dad.
Ah, yes. Okay.
And actually, because he's so young, he set a very low bar, hence him saying we were great.
Okay.
You could take a lesson from him, Dan.
Perhaps. Our next story comes from AIN Online. In this industry, we like to name things and we like to use acronyms, certainly. And you know, we've talked about future narrow bodies and whether Boeing and Airbus are going to re-engine existing aircraft or build new. And now we're starting to see some terminology come for this this aircraft. So we have from Ian Dawkins. He's the Airbus Senior VP of Strategy and Future Programs. And he talks about the A30X project now. And this is the term they're using for the next generation Airbus narrow bodies. He comments that none of the upcoming single-aisle airliners, we've seen these from Bombardier and the Chinese Comac C919 and the Russian MS-21, he's saying that those aren't going to deliver the kind of technological leaps that the air carriers are looking for. But the interim, the re-engined A320, they're calling the A320 NEO, which stands for
new engine option,
right?
Ooh,
wow. They should have just called it the Frankenbus.
The Frankenbus. Oh, that's
Courtney. Cool. Can you comment on this? Because if you can't, I have something to help.
Do you have duct tape, Rob?
Yeah, here I. Do you want me to put a piece of this over your mouth? We could just try it. Should we just try a piece?
Give it a shot.
Here, wait. All right. Hang on. Okay. All right, Courtney, here. Take this one.
Okay. All right. Now, looks good, Rob.
I like him like this.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
I think it adds a flavor of professionalism. Oh, we better take it off. He'll be really upset. All right, hang on. Let's get it off here. Okay.
Yow! Jeez!
You know, and you know what Courtney just lost his goatee.
Yeah, I no longer have a beard.
That's right.
You know what they say about going quick is painless? No, that's not true.
That's yeah.
So if this is the Neo engine, to get back on topic now that we've gone through the S&M
yes, David,
portion
please.
Of the episode, does this mean we're now getting into a zone where it's imagination and it's not really reality? AAK, a certain movie that includes Neo?
Yeah, it could be. Well, you know, I think we've said it before, is the airframers are going to dance around about this, at least publicly. You know, it's, you got to know that when you develop, when you re-engine an aircraft, or when you, certainly when you develop a brand new airframe, this takes, you know, years and years and, you know, billions of dollars. You have to think about not what, you know, the customer wants now, but what the customer is going to want 3 or 5 or 8 or 10 years into the future. And that's difficult, especially when you're talking about, you know, the level of funding for the development work that that we are here. So, you know, you're going to see some positioning, some jockeying. What Airbus, I think, is saying here is that, you know, what they really like to see, or what they say the airlines really like to see, is a significant change, something really big. And that's going to take time. That's going to, you know, be out in the sort of the 2025 time period, which
but
is...
What else are the airlines going to say?
Exactly, exactly. You can't say much more than that. Leahy's he's going all the way. He's talking about, you know, composites and geared turbofan concept and the open rotor concept. And this is all stuff that, yeah, it has the opportunity or the potential to offer, you know, huge, you know, fuel savings. But we're talking 15 years out into the future, you know, at least.
And at what price? And at what price if they did bring the market based on all this research?
You know, I think, just to comment on something I'm not supposed to comment on, I think the Mexican standoff between Boeing and Airbus is absolutely palpable and just great entertainment.
It is. It's
for
wonderful.
Us airplane geeks. Because, you know, you had Airbus come out and say, you know, the new engine option and we're just, you know, we can just put new engines on it. And Boeing kind of stayed quiet. And then you heard Boeing say, well, you know, we can do that too, but we're kind of looking at a new airframe. And Airbus said, we'll announce it at Farnborough. And Boeing said, we'll announce it at the end of the year. And then Airbus is like, well, wait a minute, if we announce one thing at Farnborough and they announce something at the end of the year, they could really kind of end what we're trying to do here. So Airbus comes back and says, screw Farnborough, we'll announce it at the end of the year. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who makes the first step.
Exactly.
Really, who's going to stick their neck out and make the decision? Because they've admitted that they have to. I'm just kind of interested to see who's going to jump first.
Yeah.
And in which direction.
And off what bridge?
And off what bridge. Yeah, because, well, that's a valid point, because, you know, when you do pull the trigger on a program like this, it's a big risk. It's, you know, this is one of those you bet your company kind of decisions.
But then you could always do what Boeing did with the SST, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of pseudo launch it. And then when Airbus goes their own direction, be like, ha ha ha, 7E7.
Court, I think you're absolutely right. This is, these are extremely interesting times, you know, for airplane geeks. And we were sort of seeing this, you know, confluence of the, you know, activities of the airframers, the activities of the engine manufacturers. And it's sort of all coming together at the same time. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. We got another message from our good friend, Richard Abalafia.
This is Richard Abalafia of Keel Group, congratulating Max and his pals on 100 episodes of Geeks Entertaining Geeks. I'm proud to have been on 3% of those. All the best for the next 100.
See, now that's a guy that gets the math. I mean, he instantly knew the percentages. I mean,
he didn't need a spreadsheet.
No. Three so far, and we look forward to having Richard on in the future.
You know, Max, but that just shows you how effective torture is.
A torture, yeah.
It works. If you've been on 3 times, you remember it.
All right, let's look at our next story. This is from theage.com.au. This is Jetstar to trial rent an iPod service. Jetstar, of course, is an Australian airline. They're going to launch a trial of a new IFE, in-flight entertainment system, that is built around the new iPad. And this is going to, I guess, roll out in a pilot basis across the certain Australian routes. And they're going to rent this, the idea is, for $10. And so you get your iPad, and that's your in-flight entertainment system. Now, I know there's been a lot of comments about this. I know, you know, Mary Kirby, I think, is... you know, has commented quite a bit about in-flight entertainment, and there's been a lot of discussion on Twitter about where this is going. I think this is the future, sort of. Maybe not the airline providing you with a device such as an iPad. But my position has been that, you know, the flying public has got increasing availability of devices like this that really represent significant entertainment machines. And, you know, people are going to bring their own. Doesn't this sort of obviate the need for airlines to provide in-flight entertainment?
I don't think so.
Yeah, neither do I. Or it could just mean different stuff on board. It would mean, I think if that's the way things are going, it means every airline needs in-seat power. And also, I mean, that, and I guess,
well, I'm not sure. I mean, you can get 9 hours out of an iPad. I mean, how much do you want to watch one device anyway?
That's true. Well, I guess the other thing, it depends. Because actually, I tried using my iPad.
Yeah.
Because I was on a couple flights last week.
So what did you?
And
so tell us.
And I was holding it, and I'm like, I need Wi-Fi.
Right.
So then that's been one of a lot of what airlines have been using as an argument for GoGo or whatever in-flight connectivity solution. People are going to bring their own stuff.
Right.
But then that brings me back to the fact that, okay, my iPad does have really good battery life. I've had it as a full charge. But then if I'm using my laptop or my iPhone, after about 2.5 hours, that guy's going to be dead.
Sure. Yeah, that doesn't have the capacity of an iPad.
You know, we've had this technology for years. I mean, okay, so the iPad is nothing better than an oversized iPod, but that's a totally different discussion for a totally different time. But we've had DVD players. We've had laptops. They still went IFE.
And yeah, that's why I don't think this necessarily. This is something that, you know, yeah, you could bring your, you know, your iPod or your Touch or your iPhone on the, you know, on a flight and watch video or listen to music. But, you know, for video, for visual stuff, it's not a very satisfying experience because the screen is so small. But now we're seeing this, you know, tablet sized devices that really represent a screen size that, you know, you'd watch a movie on it.
Well, the DVD players have been. You know, relatively that small for a while. And you know, I have a 2-year-old, so I'm only 2 years into the portable DVD player.
Yeah.
But ours folds flat, no problem. We can plug headphones into them and we can do anything. Not to discredit the iPad, but to just look at what, you know, is this really that disruptive in the aviation industry? And will it really overcome IFE? And I think the big topic is, how are they going to keep track of these things?
Rent them out.
Well, funny. I'm not sure do you guys see Cranky Flyer's post on this thing?
Yes.
Yeah. It was just a picture of the iPad and then super text over the iPad that just said, "Steal me," with multiple exclamation points. And he actually wrote that United had this issue when they had DVD players that they were giving out, even though they could only play Region 8. People would take them, and then eventually they switched to a different portable player with a hard drive, and I think he said it's been better. And that's actually one reason why I don't think this is as huge as people make it out to be, because there are plenty of airlines like Alaska or Hawaiian that use DigiCore already, where you can get and own your own little player.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's actually and preloaded with content, and one reason I like my iPad is because I customize my iPad with what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they're just handing me something with pre-programmed stuff, which is,
That's a great point, Dan. I mean, the power of the iPod, phone, pad is that you make it yours.
Exactly. And I think no one is better at satisfying your entertainment needs than you. And that's exactly what people do. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not hung up on, you know, the iPad itself as, you know, as the device. I mean, there's a whole slew of Android-powered tablets getting ready to come out in response. I just think it's a whole new class of device that to me represents I see it as a perfect entertainment device. And I look at one of these, I say, you know, that's what I'm going to screw around with the next time I'm on a 6-hour flight.
The only other, it's probably pretty weak of a counter argument, but the one thing I like about in-flight entertainment is I like to be surprised with something new. I know that sounds weird, and I guess that you could do from iPad, but actually that could work. Actually, is like I've discovered shows on airplanes, to be honest with you, but that could work for an iPad too.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for them to embed the iPad into the seat in front of you, so it says So they say, is your iPad secured, upright, and locked?
Yeah.
You know, that might not be too far off, David.
Yeah.
I just think it would work better with – if because I think Jetstar, on some aircraft, they do have the power. But I think it would work the best if you're on aircraft with Wi-Fi with in-seat power to keep it charged, because it does have a pretty awesome battery life, but I found if I'm using certain apps, it will drain pretty quickly. Granted, that's usually when I'm flying X-Plane on the iPad, and that's pretty resource intensive.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm a dork.
Weren't you going to give us a little X-Plane review?
Oh, it's so awesome. I was thinking about getting it for my iPhone, but I decided not to. For the iPhone edition, you buy multiple different versions of the simulator, and they're like $10 each, whereas for the iPad, it's $9.99, and you get a lot more stuff. And also, I haven't bought it, but I feel I wouldn't like X-Plane on the smaller screen.
You know what's really bad about X-Plane on the iPhone, though, is I have that, and when you're playing it, people notice that you're tilting your head, and you're kind of, you know, moving your shoulders and tilting your head, and people look at you and say, what are you doing? I'm playing like I'm flying. They said, oh, wonderful. Okay.
But I think the iPad, it's really fun. They have plenty of regions. A lot of the airports are just straight runways, but they do have some airports that are modeled a bit more like San Francisco is done very well. If anyone's like a Microsoft Flight Simulator dork like me, the scenery is probably somewhere between Flight Simulator 2000 and Flight Simulator 2002. But considering it's on an iPad with limited processing capability, it's still really awesome. So plenty of regions. If you can't find an aircraft that you like, something's wrong with you. They have a bunch of military fighters. If you're in some of the fighters, you can actually like be in a dogfight. You can land on carriers. They have a 777, an A380, 747, A320, 757, MD-80, a bunch of business jets and GA aircraft, some gliders, some helicopters.
Rob, you notice how when he got to military aircraft, he just said military aircraft?
Well,
and then he got the biz jets and GA aircraft, but all the airliners got named by number and designation.
This is true. I'm sorry. You can fly the space shuttle, which sounds really cool, except if you're me, because you keep accidentally blowing up the space shuttle on reentry. Yeah, it's really tough. But yeah, you can launch it. You can try to dock with the space station. Also, something I'm really horrible with.
Mm.
And actually, I haven't tried it just because I'm cheap. But maybe now that I got an iTunes gift card as a gift, obviously, I'll buy it. But for like a $5, you can get an Apollo mission add-on and actually drive around on the moon and stuff, which sounds really
cool.
I haven't tried that. But yeah, if you're an airplane dork, this is it's definitely worth the $10.
You're giving it a thumbs up.
Oh yeah, I mean this is what was really bad. Just a tip to my fellow college students: if you get an iPad, don't buy X-Plane for iPad the same weekend that you're studying for finals.
You made that mistake.
Yeah. Really poor life choice there, but it all turned out well in the end.
You know, I have to be honest. I'm kind of surprised that you guys don't think that this is a kind of a groundbreaking technology, because I would think that the airline folks are going to look at this and say, look at all the infrastructure we don't need to put in the airplane.
Exactly.
I just can't believe that. I don't know how many of you have flown American lately, but they're still on first generation video systems. In fact, even the 777 that I took down to Brazil, the video the in-flight entertainment was awful. I mean, it was better on my iPhone than it was on the airplane. And I just think they're going to look at this and say, "Oh my God, this is just a heavenly opportunity here."
Well, it's cost avoidance. I mean, IFE is – that's pure cost, right? There's no revenue associated with IFE, is there?
Well, why not?
No. Actually, well, like
there JetBlue might and Frontier be some, will, I mean.
Like JetBlue and Frontier will charge for movies.
I can't remember any flights where they sold movies where more than just a handful of people ponied up to whatever the money.
And actually,
know,
Frontier charges for TV too, now that I think about it. For me, if we didn't have portable IFE units already – I'd be like, wow, this is so cool. But I mean, I think it's a cool application. I'm really impressed that a company got together and got this out so quickly. I'm concerned about theft. And I think Mary Kirby did interview the CEO of the company, and I think they are working on a solution for this. Is okay, it has awesome battery life, but you got to find a way to charge a bunch of iPads all at the same time.
All
really
at once, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
but I would think, too, that an RFID chip in these things can't be that difficult to muster up. Yeah, I mean, you'd be able to.
So they have those little buzzers at the
yeah, door. At the door.
It's like they do.
Yeah,
you know,
the store.
The stores.
Sure, like when you try to get out the store with the six pairs of jeans on.
Looking a little rotund.
Am I the only person? Now, I'm going to speak truly as an aviation geek. Okay. Am I the only person that uses the ultimate air in-flight entertainment, the window?
Oh no, no. I mean, if you, uh-huh.
I will spend the whole flight looking out that window. I don't care about the movies. I don't care about the computer. I don't want to know. I'm flying, and that's the most important thing.
You don't fly much when it rains, do you, David?
I don't fly much, unfortunately.
Because it's white.
I think David has a good point.
Yeah, it is a good point. I like it.
I know. I mean, I actually, it was funny. I was thinking of getting, I was flying American this past week, and it was an old configuration 737-800, which means you only have power in some rows in coach. I'm sorry, that was too detailed. But I could have only gotten a middle seat in those rows, and I did not give them my window because I was going to watch the River Visual approach into DCA. There is no two ways about it, which is a beautiful approach.
It is.
That's sit on the left side. Beautiful.
Down the Potomac, right?
Oh, yeah. And that way, I mean, you just look at your window like, wow, it's the mall.
Rob, hey, Rob, you know the official call out required on that approach, right?
I know. I remember having done it once, and I remember there are a number of step down fixes, but I'm not sure if what you mean by the call out.
Well, the call, if you're arriving from the north on the river visual, the required call out is whee! That is a blast to fly.
It was funny just to watch, because actually, if you're into the DC area and you're an airplane dork and you haven't been to Gravelly Point yet to go spotting, drop whatever you're doing right now and go. But it's just so fun to watch how pilots approach that approach differently. It was very interesting.
All right, we need to move on, but first, this from Carlene.
Congratulations, you airplane geeks. Hard to believe you made it 100 episodes. Way to go. This is Carlene Pettit, live from Seattle at carlenepettit.blogspot.com.
Hard to believe.
Just to add to Carlene's message, I'd like to point out 100 episodes without bloodshed.
Yet. Yeah, no casualties.
Yet.
Yet, thank you.
Which,
well said.
The night is young. In fairness, how many of us have actually met?
How many of us have met now?
None.
Well, I bet a lot of listeners don't realize that
we've never met.
I've never met
any of you. Yeah,
I've never met Max. I've never met Dan. Thank God. But David, this is the first time we've actually talked on the same episode.
That's right.
Yeah, it's fascinating that.
I do apologize. I had some family business, so I was muted when Richard Abulafia's bit was playing. But you know, he needs a green jacket.
I know.
Frankie Flyer asks for one every time we bring him back.
Oh, does he really? You mean this joke's already been said?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
It was like October. You're a little.
Courtney, Richard doesn't even rank.
See, that's why. You know, you get my generation that grew up watching SNL when Tom Hanks got his green jacket for being on five times and Steve Martin and all those guys.
What was the one episode? I think it was Paul Simon and somebody else. They actually got to go to the special room. They had a whole lounge.
They had a special room. Yep, we need that.
Is there a green Airplane Geeks t-shirt?
We can make one. You can change the colors on the wall.
I know.
Primary
I don't
shirt.
Know if there's green. If there's green, then we'll take care of them.
Oh, and actually, also, just to emphasize that we haven't met yet, donations to the Airplane Geeks host to go to Oshkosh Fund can be sent to me.
You're going, Dan. There's some of us who aren't even going yet.
I know, but just let me handle all the finances for everyone's tickets.
Oh, yeah, we trust you with that.
I am a finance major.
But I have to say,
that's why we don't trust
that's
you.
Right, that's right.
Look, there's this really hot stock right now.
Yeah. Okay, this next story is from RTT News. This is Boeing-led team bags $1.7 billion multiple award contract from Federal Aviation Administration.
Excuse me, Mr. Max, I believe you really interrupted Mr. Miller.
I can shut this show down as I created it.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say...
You're running the server.
I don't know about you, Max, but Richard Abulafia was always the most fun I had.
The
funniest man in aviation.
That's right.
Let me point out that the show really didn't have any comedy in it until the first time he was on. At least that's the way I feel.
That's well said.
Well, it didn't have as much, certainly.
Back to the topic at hand.
Yes, the news.
Yeah, so Boeing gets a nice big government contract, huh?
Yeah, this is part of.
Oh, they got the tanker, did they?
No.
Oh, no.
Had to bring that up, didn't you?
These are awards for the next gen air traffic control system, and this has gone to Boeing, and some others have received funding under this General Dynamics and ITT. Those three have got contracts that, according to this article, have a potential value of $4.4 billion. The ceiling for the entire program is listed as $7 billion, which is certainly nothing to sneeze at. So I guess, Rob, you know, I mean, it's on the one hand, it's great that finally things seem to be moving along with, you know, with next gen air traffic control. Someone mentioned the tanker. I'm glad this isn't being bid in a manner that follows the same lines as the tanker, of course, and we'd never have next-gen ATC.
But. Well, of course, the problem with this, too, is that there are an awful lot of people that say it's been coming for a long time, and it isn't here yet. And, of course, the airlines, and Dan, you can probably attest to this, that the airlines are saying, look, who the Sam Hill is paying for this on the airplanes, because we don't really know what the benefit is. What's his name from U.S. Air, Parker? Said just the other day that they weren't going to pay for this because they didn't see any near-term value, let alone any long-term value.
Well, there have only been really
financial.
Actually, on this, in the U.S., I think the only two airlines that have really come out strongly for next-gen is primarily Alaska. And they've been using RNP for years, and they see the benefits a lot operationally just because.
Sure, and so does Southwest.
Well, especially just in Alaska, just in some of the conditions that they're flying in, they wouldn't be able to operate some flights otherwise. But yeah, and Southwest has really come out to say this would really improve our fuel efficiency, and they're making the investment to upgrade a lot of the 737-300 cockpits to handle RNP. So apparently they're seeing the benefits here.
Right, and don't you think, though, that part of the reason airlines are holding back is that there's no pressure on them right now with hundreds and thousands of airplanes being delayed on a daily basis because the economy is sour and people are not flying and there are less airplanes. But if this was 2 years ago or 3 years ago with the kind of traffic that we had, I have a feeling they might be looking at this a little differently. But it's going to get back to that eventually. They're just pretending like it won't.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, because I think actually I remember hearing the stat back in 2008 when a lot, maybe Courtney, you remember this better than I do, but there's a stat with all the cuts in 2008. It was almost like an airline the size of Northwest had been removed from the industry. Was that?
Yeah, it was about, what, 10 or 11%.
Things are slowly coming back. There are actually, I forget the exact number, but there are a few carriers. Actually, let me scroll down here. There are a few carriers that are slowly adding back capacity. In April, the airlines that are up for capacity were JetBlue, AirTran, and Alaska.
You mean you have notes? You're using cue cards?
No, I just...
David,
no, I just
you have cue cards?
No,
it's a crib
I just,
sheet.
No, I just remembered that was on Addison Shotlin's blog, so I shot over there really quickly.
Oh,
but,
man.
But yeah, no, I mean, capacity slowly coming back. I mean... And clearly the airlines are planning on growing capacity. Why else would Delta actually be hiring pilots? Horror of horrors.
Right.
When was the last time that happened?
You know, yeah. as I'll say, enter the different part of the industry and have kind of seen how the business decisions are made, I will say that the one thing that surprised me the most is how many times I've heard, we'll deal with that problem when we get to it.
As opposed to when it gets to them.
Yeah, but, you know, and then, you know, you're kind of like, well, isn't that kind of why you are in so much trouble now?
Yeah.
But I think it could be kind of a thing. This is expensive, and, I mean, Courtney, you probably know this better than I do, too, is Southwest has more cash than others. They probably have the financial wherewithal. Ooh, I feel that's a good word, to actually pay for this.
Wherewithal, so, we'll give you that. Look, cash is king.
Don't say that it's a cash. I mean, don't say that it has no benefit. It does. You just don't have the money to finance it. I mean, I could buy that. Just tell me the truth. I mean, well, be honest.
I guess the airline could say, well, the money that we'd have to borrow would be so expensive. But no, I think there are real benefits here. But I mean, I'm sure if the airlines could find a way to get some government funding here, that would be nice.
And that's what they're hoping for.
You know, in an era where the aircraft that is bringing the most capacity gains to airlines is the MD-80, you have to wonder really how far in advance the airlines are looking. And when somebody says, hey, here's something that could lower your fuel bill and there might be a price tag associated with it, they just say, whoa, price tag. Ha, no, whoa.
No, whoa. You say the MD-80 is bringing the most capacity increase right now?
I pulled that out of my rear end, but you get
No, I was just wondering. I was with Delta and then buying MD-90s.
Well, the MD-90s at Delta and the MD-80s at Allegiant, of course.
True. Fair point.
All I'm saying is stuff is coming out of the desert. The MD-80 is a nice little out-of-production fuel hog that just kind of, you know, exaggerates the point.
And if they bring one of those out of the desert, what does it actually cost them? I mean, what can you buy one of those for if you were a startup carrier?
Probably
cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what's cheap?
Less than a million.
Think about that. And well, if you flew it for a couple of years, even if it sucks gas, I mean,
well,
what's
Rob,
a newer
let's put it this way. Allegiant, would they buy from SAS 20?
Yeah.
Recently? Only 12 of those will fly. The other 7 or 8 will be used to get the first 12 flying.
Yeah, parts.
That's how cheap they are.
Ooh, I can get that number for you. Hold on a second.
Yeah, it's close.
And that's the other thing when you bring them out of the desert is sometimes if you're a carrier, you'll put an engine that is close to a maintenance check on a frame that's going to sit in the desert anyway and swap
right.
If yeah.
That'll cost you more than the aircraft, I suspect. Is
an engine swap?
Yeah. Or overhauling the engines, getting the airframe in shape.
Yes. And as it's turning out, C-checks are essentially grounding the airplanes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you fly it until it runs out of time, and then you just send it over. You call up somebody else who wants to get rid of an MD-80, and you say, well, just drop it off.
Yeah.
Allegiant said that for each MD-80 to buy it and then get up to shape for passenger service, a little bit less than $4 million a frame.
Yeah, so that includes probably about $1 million to $2 million of initial maintenance work.
Yeah.
It says it would require maintenance, paint, seats, equipment upgrades, and other necessary modifications.
Yeah, and I think that the purchase price is a fraction of that total.
Yeah. Well, and they bought the MD-87s just for the parts. They're not even going to fix those up.
They're not even going to fly those, yeah. But just to kind of circle around to the original point, if this is what we're talking about in this day and age, you know, Delta's still got DC-9s, don't they?
Getting rid of the 30s and 40s at the end of this year, though, but the 50s are going to keep going strong.
Well, they need to keep the 50 because they need something to ferry the A320 crews back from the desert when they parked the last A320. Those will be around for so long.
Yeah.
But the point just is, look where the mindset is, and it's not on investing for the future.
Because they don't have the kitty to do that with.
Yeah, I agree, Max. I agree entirely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Give this a listen.
Congratulations to Airplane Geeks for 100 episodes. I wish you 100 more from Flying with Fish.
Steve Frischling.
How cool is that?
Yeah. The friend of the TSA.
Oh, Max, that's who we should have had. We should have had TSA Bob.
Hey, screw you, Rob.
You've got me.
It took like months to get permission last time. All right, we have one more story. Rob sent this in. Rob, I'm kind of confused by this. This is from the BBC. Work starts in a £15 million plan to get Concorde flying.
Oh, what's so difficult to understand about that?
Well, this thing was retired 7 years ago.
I know,
right?
So.
And yeah. So someone is going to get this thing back up in the air?
Well, you know what it is? In the warbird world, taking an old airplane and getting it flying again is considered kind of normal everyday operation.
Right.
We don't do that with a whole lot of airliners, though. And this is a really,
really special case. And so I think this is pretty cool. But then I always liked the Concorde anyway. Kind of
and Rob, let's put it in perspective. They're actually going to try to get it flying.
Oh, yeah.
Normally, the Brits will load up the engines, make sure the landing gear works, and run it up and down the runway so it makes noise. That's their idea of a warbird. They want to fly this. They want to fly this one over the Olympics.
Okay, you know, when I'm at Farnborough this year, I'm going to remember next month to tell them that little story about my fellow geek and his opinion of the Brits.
I think he's
I'll
correct.
Give them your email. Yeah. I actually know, but I think having a flying Concorde around,
would be cool.
I just think that's a pretty cool thing. I mean, that was let's face it, that was a piece of history, and all of us thought there was going to be some sort of a next generation supersonic airplane, and we just kind of, well, it's very much like what we're talking about with next gen. Somebody said, oh, we can't afford that. Mm. Oh, what a waste of time. Let's just go on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, we thought this was going to be the future.
Exactly.
You just can't fly it anywhere. It makes too much noise.
So I guess this, according to this article, the work's being done at the Le Bourget Air and Space Museum. And I see that the work is being done. There's a partnership, two groups, the British Save Concorde group and a French group, Olympus 593. So, yeah, I mean, wish them
luck. Which is like how it started. The French and the British are actually working together.
Outstanding.
We always if it flies again, what a novelty. But that entire program was a novelty.
Yes.
It never really was proven economically successful. But I will add that, what is that? The airplane's got to be, what, 35 years old?
Probably something like that, yeah.
But they're going to be able to get the Concorde back up in the air. We're talking about MD-80s and MD-90s. And yet all we hear about are delays on the new aircraft programs, the 380 and the 787. So everything's all backwards.
It is.
But to appease all those military geeks out there, just think, when the last B-2 gets retired, they'll be flown home by a B-52 crew.
Yeah.
Sometimes new is not better.
Now, how do you know that, David? How do you know that the B-2s will be flown home by B-52 crews? I mean, where did you get that fact from? Did you pull that out of...
What's your source?
Did you make that up? I'm sorry, I don't want to sound like that Canadian guy.
When grandkids and possibly great-grandkids of B-52 pilots are flying B-52s, that should tell you something, and the Air Force isn't going to retire them until 2050.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Wow.
That is pretty amazing.
Well, although, see, wait, 2050, you know, for the beef? Wow.
I'll tell you what, though. Wow. If anybody
100-year-old airframes.
If anybody ever develops a smoke-sensing missile, that airplane's done.
Well, that's true. Engine technology has come quite a ways.
You can draw 8 distinctive black lines coming off those things.
Yeah, yeah. All right, why don't we close out the news with a message from Binet.
This is Binet Wilson, the aviation goddess. Max, I'd like to congratulate you, Rob, Dan, and David on your 100th episode. And here's looking to the next 100 episodes. Congratulations.
Guys, I like you all.
Yes.
Okay, I hear a butt coming.
I know.
But Binet is at the top of the list of people I want to meet.
Now Binet is the one person I have met.
She just sounds like a ton of fun.
She is a ton of fun.
Yeah, and she's Rob, wonderful. We heard about that trip, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, that was the yacht trip.
Oh, whoa. Yes.
Max, any chance that'll be happening this summer since I'm close to Binet, you know, same?
Yes.
Ooh, okay. Because Binet is actually on my list, too, for people I need to meet while I'm down here in D.C.
And Philadelphia is only an hour and a half away from Baltimore. Hint, hint, hint.
And Toronto is just the next country over.
Now, Binet's got a delightful child who actually was on our podcast.
Really?
Hi, Uncle Max. My name's Clarissa. Don't be mean to my mommy, Uncle Rob.
I knew that was coming. I wasn't mean to her mommy.
I mean, when I was at RAA last week in Milwaukee, I saw, in fact, it was really fun. They had the social media panel. I saw Mary Kirby and Benet Brett. Sorry, Brett, from Crank. And they were all very, very nice. And Benet gave me a big hug and told me she completely forgave me for the callous things I said about ladies a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that was pretty callous.
But hilarious. I mean, callous. Yeah, so it also another story. And Rob, on my very first day of work, the vice president of my company walks up to me and says, "Hey, I heard your name the other day." Oh, no,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, now you're
screwed. Yeah, I was sitting next to a guy at Paris, some Rob Mark. I'm like, you're kidding me. But I've had that happen so many times. And I'll tell you, the community of airplane geeks that are out there is pretty phenomenal. I've had bosses come up to me. Shashank was in Toronto, and he said, "Oh, you know Courtney? Overcomes the vice president." Hmm. So if anybody happens to find themselves around anybody I know, make sure you drop my name because it works for me.
Well, you know, and going back to that, I thought that was so funny sitting down at this table at the show in Paris, having dinner, and there are all these people, and none of us knew each other except for a couple of the guys from Bombardier. And this fellow talked about being involved in the C series. And I said, "Oh, do you know Courtney Miller?" He said, "Yeah, he starts work on Monday." I said, do you know all about him?
Oh, and thanks, said, Rob.
Why? I said, "Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Really? Just, it's okay. I'm just kidding." And so that was why you didn't get that last raise.
I appreciate that. I really do, that's Rob. Okay. And, you know, you can just retroactively send me a check.
Sure, 10-4.
But, you know, it has popped up several times where, you know, they'll say something like, "Oh, you know, it'd be really nice if we could really get in touch with, like, Mary Kirby or Benet Wilson." And I'm thinking, well, just pick up the phone and talk to them. It's
yeah,
Benet.
That's all it takes oftentimes.
And I've said this a couple times. You mean Aunt Benet? They go, what? Come on, it's just a small community.
It is. It's very great. Small.
It's absolutely phenomenal. And I tell you, this podcast, especially for me, to be selfish a little bit, has done so much in just meeting, well, actually not meeting, but talking to the different people. And gosh, 100 episodes, Max. I mean, sheesh.
And here's where it started.
The Eclipse 400 makes strides. The Air Force to fire two top executives. United to remove 100 aircraft. And Silverjet becomes the latest casualty. All with discussion of service in the airline industry this week on the inaugural Airplane Geeks podcast.
So that's where it started.
Wow. Silverjet.
That's pretty cool.
Hey, at least, you know, we saw some potential and called it the inaugural.
Yeah, because like we said before, we didn't know each other and we weren't sure what we were. Well, I didn't know what I was doing. You had a little more experience with this and we didn't know where it was going to go or if it was going to last.
You know, and we fumbled along for how many episodes before, I can't remember the name, the captain, the podcasting captain who is the guru of podcasting. He's not doing it anymore.
No, Captain Chris.
Captain Chris,
Captain
yeah.
Chris, right.
And the dude, that guy had the voice for podcasting. He had the equipment, and he really got it. He set us straight.
Well, could I ask a dumb question for someone who came in on episode 51?
Go ahead,
oh, I don't know. Ask Dan. He's been doing that all episode.
you were from Area 51?
Yeah, that's right. Courtney, what possessed you?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, yeah.
You know, I don't know that I've told you this, Max, but I had actually, I don't even know who this guy was, but I had actually emailed somebody else about
Max and was also ran.
I was second choice. Great.
Well,
thanks.
I don't even the guy wasn't even in aviation. I don't know what I was thinking.
No, I remember. Yeah, I remember you hearing telling the story.
Okay, but you know, I never heard a response. Thank goodness. You know, but after my last episode, last summer sometime, he sends me an email and says, "Yeah, sure." Like, too late, man. We're like 50 episodes into this thing.
Yeah.
Think about when this was started. I mean, think about how young I was.
I'm thinking about
four then or what?
Dude, I just graduated from high school back then. Yeah, I mean, we were kids. Rob was not eligible to collect Social Security early back then.
Lost was still on the air.
Yeah.
Did Northwest still exist?
Just getting started. I mean, that didn't close until October of 2008, so that was still in the beginning stages.
We did this in 2008?
Yeah.
Holy cow, it's like last decade, Max.
I know, it feels that way. I think June 10th, 2008 was the first episode.
Oh, but, so if we've reached 100 episodes, should we be asking our listeners if we should go for the next 100? Or should we just leave well enough alone?
Let them decide.
Let them decide, yeah.
No, on second thought, never mind.
There's a lot of interesting, a lot of great things that have resulted, you know, from this. Not the least of which is just some of the people you meet. One of the really interesting people I think that we've come across in this podcast is Bart Klepper from the Air Pigs blog and podcast. And in fact, he sent a message.
Hey, it's Mart from airpigs.com. I was on episode 33, and now look at these guys. 100 episodes of the Airplane Geeks podcast. Great work, guys.
I mean, Mart's a guy that comes from a longtime aviation background. His father was an airline pilot for United, I think, 747. And you know, Mart's been flying since he was a kid. And, you know, another example of an aviation enthusiast who, you know, thought he had some things to say and put together a blog, a website, a podcast. And here's a guy who's now creating this, you know, fantastic content. And, you know, I mean, we're always encouraging people with an interest in aviation to start blogs, start websites, start podcasts even.
Right. And we've got to knock that stuff off. I mean, it's getting to be way too many of them out there.
No,
well, you know,
never.
Max, when we started this, at least my goal was to just kind of, if it didn't already exist, which it did, we just didn't all know each other, was really the Airplane Geek community, to find out who we are. And, you know, with just you and myself making total fools of ourselves, and allowed a couple other people to make fools of ourselves, you know, we've kind of created this community, which I'm very, very proud of. I really have to say, and I think one of our greatest success stories is the Plane Crazy Down Under podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what they've been able to do with it is absolutely phenomenal. Make sure everybody goes and listens to that, by the way. But, you know, aside from their toilet water spinning in the opposite direction, it's a great podcast.
It's a wonderful podcast. And it started – how did it start?
Here. It started after they started coming on here. I mean, how many shows did he do with us?
All the best to those guys and just what a success story for them. But Max, that's when it really occurred to me that, you know, when we start birthing, shall you say, when we start creating other pockets of the community is really where I was really happy and satisfied with where we had gone with it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and Rob and Dan and David and bringing them on the show too. But that's another.
Well, topic. I think that goes without saying, doesn't it, David?
I wouldn't argue with that statement.
Because would you have asked Dan to be on the show, Courtney?
What, you want me to pick favorites? All right, I'll pick my favorite right now. David.
There you go.
So Dan,
I never met him.
How long would it take us to create our own show?
I mean,
I don't know, 10 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be quick to record the show. It'd be the editing and distribution side that really... But also, just to.
But Rob, once school starts, it's going to go out the window.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But just
that's true.
Just to add to what Courtney said, I mean, birthing podcast is really cool, but the whole conception process is a lot more exciting.
Yeah, in a way it is.
What happens on the podcast stays on the podcast.
I don't think you're talking about just podcasts, there, young Daniel. I think,
and we did have that bench last week that was in the A380 laboratory.
Yes,
you know, one issue that we sort of struggle with too is the length of the podcast. I remember at the beginning, Court, you know, we would talk about shooting for like, you know, 40, 45 minutes, something that is sort of compatible with most people's driving commute. And over time, it's grown and lengthened, and I was always a little concerned about that. But the feedback that we get from the listeners is generally that they like the longer podcast. They like the, you know, the 90-minute. They're not put off by that. So, and that was always kind of a surprise for me.
You know, I think the surprise was that people were actually interested in hearing us.
They were listening.
You know, my mindset the entire time was, all right, These guys have 45 minutes. They're donating to us.
Right, yeah.
So let's not make it easy for them to turn us off. And then we kind of got some feedback saying, hey, why'd you quit talking? Okay. Maybe I'll ask each one of you, your favorite episode, or who is your favorite guest?
Ooh.
Yeah, that's tough.
I can do that off the top of my head.
Okay.
Carlene, you rock.
Yeah.
That was my all-time favorite episode.
That's what I would say. You know, there's favorite guest and favorite episode. Favorite guest is a little more difficult, but favorite episode, we got so much positive feedback from that one with Carlene Pettit. You know, I think part of it was the back and forth, that there was, not that there was an argument, but there was a good discussion, a healthy discussion, different viewpoints.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that was really valuable.
Did we hit a length record with that episode? I feel it was close.
I'm not sure. Yeah, there's a couple.
You're the one with Excel.
Yeah. Oh, actually, let me check out my spreadsheet. Yes.
But Rob, how about yourself? And don't say the one you were on, your first, when you were the guest.
Well, I was going to say the one with Carlene is the one I was not on, so I can't really say that. Gee, I don't know. You know, hey,
How I feel, Rob.
It's a very interesting question, though. I'd have to really sit back because, of course, you know, at my age, my memory's not what it used to be. And so I don't know. I'd have to really go back and think about that. I mean, I think the person that I enjoyed the most probably was Richard Abulafia, because I thought he was I like somebody that's very bright, but he's also very funny. And a lot of times, let's face it, we've had a few guests that perhaps were a little quieter than we would have liked. But I enjoy those kinds of back and forth kinds of sessions. And I actually listened to the whole piece that you guys did when Carlene was a guest. And I said, boy, because that's just after I came back from the hospital. And I said, oh, I wish I hadn't missed that one. It sounded like they were having such a good time.
It was good. And, you know, listeners might be interested to know. I mean, we don't really vet the guests in advance to any great degree. Oftentimes, when we're recording the podcast, that's the first time we've actually talked to our guest. It's always a surprise, but that's part of the fun.
Yeah, I mean, especially when Brett Snyder broke out in all those ethnic slurs. I'm kidding.
No, that was not true.
And then, of course, we could talk about our great experiment that Dan and Max.
Jeopardy.
Yes. Ooh, that was very good.
That was the most loved, worst executed podcast we did.
But you know
that
what
was pretty cool.
But you know what really impressed me is even though we never got the audio to work on Ustream, and we still don't know why, because we tested it like 3 times and it all worked, so many people kept watching just the Jeopardy board.
Yes. Yeah.
It was so impressive.
It was, and it remains a hugely downloaded episode.
Do we know what the number one downloaded episode is?
We can. I don't.
Well,
have
well,
it
here's the thing. I think our downloaded counter is a little bit off sometimes. Like, I think the Evan Sparks episode, like the first time he was on, has like 11,000 downloads.
Yeah, these.
Yeah, we did get some weird things.
Yeah,
but I will say, Max, my favorite episode in was the one time I was truly starstruck.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
Which one?
Alfred Kahn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There was so much, like, so much of what aviation or the industry is today is because of that guy. And not a lot of people know of that. And I just, Max, I just felt like I had arrived. Like, this was the top. Dr. Kahn was
fantastic. Here's a 90-plus-year-old man, still active, certainly seen a lot, been through a lot. It contributed a lot to what aviation is today. It was a thrill to have him on.
Who booked him?
Max did.
Yeah, I contacted him.
Wow.
Max is the king of guests. I mean, the deal was when we started this whole thing.
Yeah.
The understanding was that, look, I think I can figure out the technical parts of it. Max, you just want to come on and be a sounding board, tell me when I'm being an idiot, and maybe get in touch with some guests. And now, by the way, Max does 100% of that, which is quite a feat. But I quickly realized that Max's ability to get guests and quality guests quickly exceeded my ability to keep up with the technical side.
Well, I actually get a little more help now. Yeah, David's come up with some guests. Rob has as well. Binet has been a great help in getting us in touch with some folks that we didn't really have direct access to. Dan comes up with
guests who never show up.
That's right. Dan's guests tend to
not show up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've had some good ones. I've had a couple good ones. I'm trying to think of who you can take credit for.
Don't embarrass anyone.
Oh no, Martin Rotler, and we've had him on a couple of times. He's good.
Right. Yeah.
There we go. But I'd like to point out that while, you know, yeah, Max does all the editing and all the finding the guest stuff, I like to think that people don't appreciate what me and Rob do, which is just talk on Sunday and then hang up and hope it comes out.
Yeah. Well, and, that's actually, besides looking pretty, I mean, I don't think there's much else we could do. But honestly, in the last month, I have tried booking some guests, and I did manage to get a couple. But I don't think I ever had any idea how tough it was to get people to do this.
And of course, I don't know about anybody else, but you mentioned you write and you work on and you talk on a podcast, and would you like to come on? And what's the first question they ask? Or they just look at you blankly. They say, what's a podcast?
Right.
Yeah.
Many of them have no idea what this is. So, you know, you have to, in some cases, take some time to, you know, to educate them. Rob, what was it? You mentioned looking good. Did I hear you say something about looking good?
He has a face for podcasting.
Yes, I do. I have a face for podcasting.
Speaking of looking good.
Hi there, everybody. It's Mary Kirby, also known as Runway Girl. And I just want to wish the Airplane Geeks a happy, happy, happy anniversary for 100 episodes. Well, it's wonderful. We love listening to you. Keep it going, guys.
You know, I'll tell you right now, let's be serious.
Guys, at RIA, Mary brought her new beau with her, and so I think she's definitely off the market, as they say. So,
oh, is that right? Oh,
yeah,
because I, you know,
wait, by new beau, do you mean ring?
Well, he didn't give her a ring yet, but
no one's off the market yet. Then,
but you know, Rob, I'm officially off the market too, but. From listening to Mary and having spoken with her and not actually having seen her, I can safely say that she is my aviation crush.
Yeah. Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Actually, Max, you can't put this in the episode. You have to promise me this.
No. It's all in.
It's all in.
It's all in, Dan.
No, because this is a joke because before I went off to this conference in Miami, Mary mailed a camcorder that all the flight people in the U.S. share. And I just joked. I was like, hey, John, guess what this means? And he's like, what? I have Mary Kirby's home address. And then my boss just goes.
Yeah, okay, I won't put that in. All right, well, we should probably wrap this up before this becomes the longest episode.
Yeah, the longest episode is Carlene's, by the way, 112 minutes and 50 seconds.
Okay. All right, any closing thoughts before we move on to our history lesson?
Just one. Thanks, Court.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Courtney, for you created the concept and pulled it off, and I'm kind of glad you sent that second email.
Did it take two?
Yeah. Apparently, you sent me one, and I didn't answer it. The first one, I got this email from this girl named Courtney, and she wanted me to, like, podcast. I figured, oh, this is a scam.
I sent it through your through the contact link and on 30,000 feet.
Yeah. Well, I get a lot of garbage come through that. I mean, good stuff as well, but I think it was something that wasn't on the up and up.
I've created a lot of things. I'd say I probably have 9 or 10 active websites running at any given time. What I cannot do is execute them.
Mm. Courtney, what is the next version of Airline Empires coming out?
Exactly. Thank you, Dan. But see, that's exactly a perfect point. And so while David, I fully appreciate that, really, and I think we all recognize that Airplane Geeks exists because of you, Max. Otherwise, it would have been two episodes. I would have said, oh, God, this editing sucks. And it would have been over. But we kept getting guests. It got to the point where I even had to step off And you took it all on, Max. And really, I know I've told you this in emails.
That was scary, let me tell you. I've
said it another times. But, Max, thanks, man. Because of you, I get to come in about every 100 episodes or so and have guys like David tell me thank you. How great is that? So
I think it's a team effort. I think it's a team effort, really.
Well, it really is. And you know what? I remember a year ago having this conversation, Max, and it's when we started getting the bits from Steve and David had just started the history. This Week in History. And we had said, you know, we really want to make this the community's podcast, not just Max and I rambling on about random stuff.
Right.
And you know what? It really has become that. I mean, it's kind of weird that it worked.
It did work. Yeah.
So my congratulations to you, Max, 100%. Just well done. Every time I pop open the website, I'm just amazed to see that things are going well. And of course, I listen to the episodes and I always think, oh, I got to get a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot out this week. And then Sunday rolls by and I'm like, wait a minute. I'm forgetting something. What didn't I do this weekend? I know it had something to do with... Oh, son of a... So,
and again, you know, the volume...
a great concept, bad execution. You see what happens.
you know, and the listener contribution is pretty significant as well and growing. We get lots of emails, lots of comments on the website, some feedback and some comments on the Facebook page. And it's, you know, it's almost become a little difficult to keep up with the volume of some of the listener contributions because there's so much of it and most of them are just really good, really fantastic. So, you know, hats off to our listeners for also participating in the conversation.
Max, thanks for not letting it die, which is really everything with the podcast. I mean, that's about the best compliment I can give you because the work involved is immense. Dan and Rob, thanks for picking it up. Really. I mean, if you think about it, you know, there's, you know, a night a week and I know you guys, and it worked out, you know, cause I know you guys are both busy, but, and Max, we had some concerns about, you know, what happens if they're both not able to make it, but you know, even then David stepped up you know, it's just one of those things that the airplane geeks around the world really, just kind of stepped up and said, you know what, we're just going to make this work because we kind of want it to. And it does.
Yeah, and I don't know, David, maybe I don't know how you feel, and same with Dan, but I couldn't imagine not doing this. I know I wasn't completely sure about all this when we started last year, but honestly, it has grown. It's just kind of, you know, the family's used to Sunday nights, and they know that's when we tape, and it's just a really great opportunity to do what Courtney said, which is kind of spread the word about the industry and all these people have all these crazy opinions, and I respect your opinions,
most of them. Yeah.
Well, to dovetail off of what Rob said, there are some weeks that I just don't really feel like writing an episode, but sure enough, come 7:45 when we start prompting for the show, suddenly it's worth it, you know?
This is one of my favorite parts of the week.
I can't imagine a Sunday night without you guys at this point. That's kind of weird, but...
No, it's not. It's not weird at all. It's
Can someone please call No Homo?
Jeez.
I guess the definition of PC.
No, Dan, I'm not going to do it.
And keep in mind, folks, we still have never met each other.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got to say something here. This Dan guy is just, he's pushing the limits, pushing the boundaries of good taste.
You know, I'm sorry, I'm just so used to listening to Courtney's
other
podcast.
We don't want a guy with good.
I'm just so used to listening to Courtney's other podcast where that's pretty normal.
Yeah, that is normal stuff. Yeah, which is, you want to see a different side of me, do that. But look.
Guyspodcast.com, everybody.
The Playing Crazy Down Under podcast. I think is, I can't say enough about those guys.
Oh, I know. Steve, they're fantastic.
And what they do over there. If anybody thinks that they can do what we're doing, that this is so easy, then do it. Please, seriously, do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Yeah, because
it's, and we'll help. We'd be happy to help.
That's what it's all about. And we will, really.
Yeah.
We will. I mean,
we have
done some things with Steve and And David, I haven't worked with you until today, but I'd be more than happy to.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why, I mean, who cares about Steve and Graham? We're the ones that should take all the credit for that whole playing crazy day.
Yeah, totally.
Why do you think they're crazy?
And Courtney, if you told me a year ago that I would be writing for a pair of Aussies, I would have told you you were nuts.
No, I mean this is awesome. I mean, I love it because I love blogging. Don't get me wrong, but I think Courtney alluded to this too. But when I'm blogging, I'm talking to myself, so no one can tell me when I'm being an idiot.
Us on the other hand,
we try though.
So it's just so great to be talking to you guys every week.
And now with This Week in Aviation, here's David Vanderhoof.
Thanks, Max. Let me preface by saying this. Not only is this the 100th anniversary, but it's my first anniversary. The first couple times that I sent in an article, I didn't get to read it. So I'm reading my very first one, which was, "My fellow airplane geeks, greetings from Ridley Park, Pennsylvania, home to all things CH-47. Thanks for the opportunity to bring you this new portion of the Airplane Geeks podcast. Welcome to This Week in Aviation, Volume 1, Episode 1, June 7th through the 13th, 2009. First from our long distance desk. On June 13th, 1910, pilot Charles Hamilton made the first one-day round-trip flight from Philadelphia to New York City. On June 10th, 1990, a Royal Brunei 767-200ER set a new distance record for twin jet airliners flying 9,253 statute miles, or 14,890 kilometers, from Seattle, Washington to Nairobi, Kenya, in 17 hours and 51 minutes. In the category of high visibility milestones, June 8, 1953, Major Dick Cattledge leads four F-84Gs through the first public demonstration of the United States Air Force Thunderbirds. Of note, the original Diamond had twin captains Bill and Buck Petillo as right and left wing. Rounding out the slot was Captain Bob Katanga. The Thunderbirds are now in their 56th, or this year would be 57th, season, and they said it wouldn't last.
Wow.
And this from the world of bicycling. On June 12th, 1979, the first man-powered aircraft to cross the English Channel is the Gossamer Albatross, designed and built under the leadership of Paul McCready, flown by bicyclist Brian Allen. It crosses from Folkestone, England, to the French coast in just 2 hours, 49 minutes of constant pedaling. Allen was heard quipping after the flight, "I just flew in from England, and boy, are my legs tired."
Please tell me you made that up.
I wrote that down.
Because that's good. You deserve credit for that.
Yeah.
Currently, the Gossamer Albatross resides at the Udar Hazy Center of the Smithsonian Institute, soon to be visited by our boy wonder, Dan Webb.
Dude, if I don't get out there while I'm down here, I will hate myself.
You should kill yourself if you don't get out there.
Dude, if worse comes to worse, I'll drive down there and take you out.
Man, that'd be sweet. That'd be pretty awesome.
And last,
don't bring him back.
Okay, I'll bury him somewhere in Dallas. From the human interest portion of our newscast, on June 11th, 1927, Charles Lindbergh was awarded the first Distinguished Flying Cross for his New York City to Paris solo crossing of the Atlantic in the Ryan NYP, Spirit of St. Louis. A 33-hour plus flight occurred on May 20th and 21st of that year. And June 13th, 1963, Vostok 6 launched, making cosmonaut Valentina Tereshkova the first woman in space. The flight lasted approximately 3 days, completing 78 orbits. And then I said this: finally, I plan to close every week with memorable first flights. Here are some first flights that occurred during the week of June 7th through the 13th. The Douglas DC-4, June 7th, 1938. McDonnell Douglas YF-17 Cobra, June 9th, 1974. The McCoy and Gervich MiG-23 Flogger, June 10th, 1967. The Ford AAT Trimotor, June 11th, 1926. And the Boeing B-777 June 12, 1994. There were none from the 13th. Evidently, aircraft designers must have triskaidekaphobia. And that's the way it was June 7th through the 13th. And this is David M. Vanderhoof, your new airplane geek historian. Thanks, Court and Max, for giving me the opportunity of a lifetime to do what I've always wanted to do, which is write history about airplanes.
Oh, thanks, David. I mean, we've really appreciated the contributions.
I love it. Well done, David.
Yeah, very good. David.
And this is where we say, well, David, we've really enjoyed having you. However,
after looking at your most recent performance.
Yes, and looking at your most recent feedback from listeners.
No.
We've only had
one negative email. Not to jinx it, but.
Well, there was. Can we bring him up?
Sure.
There was DC iPod.
Yeah, that just that one guy.
We've had a couple of other criticisms, but let me slip this in.
This is Brett Snyder, a.k.a. the Cranky Flyer, saying congratulations to the Airplane Geeks for having absolutely nothing better to do for 100 Sundays of their lives. Nice work, guys.
It's always great to have Brett on.
Or in the case of Max, nothing better to do for 100 Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brett's really been he's been a kind of a champion for the show ever since one of the very first shows. So thanks goes out to Brett as well. Even though I so could have won Jeopardy.
we keep saying we're going to figure that out and resurrect Jeopardy, and you'd make a great contestant.
Dibs.
The didgeridoo means it's time for the Australian News Desk. Here's two of the craziest guys we could find south of the equator. It's Steve Vischer and Grant McHaren from the Plane Crazy Down Under podcast.
Observe the males of the Plane Crazy Down Under species as they attempt to put together their latest Australia desk.
What do you mean you haven't come up with a list of stories for the week? What's going on?
Oh, bloody hell, Steve. There's a crap load of stories here. I mean, look at the list. Just look at this list, man. Look at it.
Why don't you... give me a rundown, Crikey.
Crikey, mate. You've got, like, Virgin Blues dropping its profit as Borghetti clears the desks for change, and it's being pummeled in the market because Qantas is saying it's all good, despite quite clearly the fact that Qantas is being impacted by the very same market issues, you know, people not really wanting to fly anymore. You've got that. You've got Tiger being voted Australia's worst airline. Oh, hello. Didn't see that one coming.
Boring.
I know. You've got the Air New Zealand 767 Air Prox with the Virgin Australia 777 that happened over Fiji. So that's still in our area, and it's some of our airlines, but, you know, Fiji, whatever. We've got a couple of RAF C-130s with smoke in the cockpit and engine troubles on two separate days. I know David definitely wants to talk about that one, or at least hear it. But,
have you rung David today?
No, I haven't, actually. I haven't hassled him. I'll remind me to do that later. But, I mean, on this list, I mean, look, just the next bit, we've got Jetstar's linking up with Air France KLM. Oh, merde.
Well, you're not Dutch, you're not much. I keep telling you that.
Yeah, but ooh la la.
Hey.
And then you've got another bloody volcano, but this time it's in the Pacific. There's a volcano in Vanuatu going, here, have a smoke plume. It's the ash in the southern hemisphere this time. But, you know, whatever. It's not that big. So, but this is interesting. Jetstar is trialing the iPad on some of its flights. I mean, you'd think Qantas would want to put something cool and funky on their mainline premium brand, but not on the cheap and nasty Jetstar. But no, maybe they're trying to lift them up. I don't know. Or, like I was saying to you the other day, if it's new, it's JQ, man. It's Jetstar all the way. But I don't know, man. There's more pages. Look, I've got all these other pages. I mean, there must be at least 100 stories to choose from.
Funny you should mention that. This 100, there's something about that. I can't think. Was there something important about 100 this week?
I don't know. What's so important about 100? I mean, what does the number mean?
I don't know.
What's it mean to you?
Well, let's see. It comes to mind. Oh, it's maybe the number of wrinkles per square inch on Rob Mark's face.
Yeah, it could be. Or, hey, I reckon it's the number of years that David's willing to look back on.
Well, yeah, it could be that too. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's the number of times that Max has had to turn on Skype and put up with our crap.
Oh, no, it's been lots more than that, mate. Lots more. But maybe it's the number of times per hour that Dan thinks about something beginning with S-E.
Well, what, seat pitch?
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's 100 is his preferred seat pitch.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of David, actually, I think 100 is probably the number of seconds you're willing to wait before ringing him again and asking him where his contribution is, you know, like the one you only just told him about.
Well, you know, he tells me he's so good. I mean, surely in a minute or two he's come up with the 28 seconds worth of sound. I mean, anyhow. thinking more on the number 100. I mean, maybe it's the number of times per day that Courtney is thankfully doesn't have to edit podcasts again.
I reckon you're pretty close on the money there. I'll tell you what, 100, it's probably the number of cold and flu pills I've taken this week just to stay alive.
Well, it's definitely at least the number of times we've used a Steve Creedy article.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, that's all very good, mate. There's bound to be more, but can you hear that noise? It looks a little distracted. I can't put up with all this arguing. I think there's something special going on over there. I think we might have been left out. Let's go and take a look.
Does it sound like a party?
Sounds like a party to me. Those guys wouldn't be partying without us, surely.
They wouldn't.
Let's go check it out.
Oh, come on. You don't think they're still upset with that time we broke into Max's studio, do you?
I think Max is finally speaking to us as of last week.
Well, he's stopped, you know, like, putting us on his block list.
Well, you did return all that silverware you took, didn't you? Well, that's what it is. It's that 100 pieces of silverware you took.
Oh, that would be it. Yeah, that's a special number. But I'm hearing the noise getting louder, man. I think it's coming from the other side of this wall. Dude, can you see over it? Is it? How are we going to get over that wall?
Hey, quick, stand on my shoulders and pull me up.
Oh, okay. I'd like to see him do this on a video podcast.
Yeah, come on, I'm only a little bloke. What are you complaining about?
Are you there yet?
Yes, I can. There's a party going on in there.
Really? I don't want to climb up and over you.
There's a lot of really old people in there. I can hear one of them from here.
Hey, this is Rob Mark from jetwine.com.
Yes.
My God, it looks like an Airplane Geeks party.
Those little devils, they've left us out.
The bums.
Come on, let's climb over Grant here and I'll let you in the back door.
Well, that's one way to get off a wall.
Well, I don't know here. I'll just ring the doorbell and see if anybody answers. My goodness, very inventive doorbell. And Max must have so much money.
Oh, well, you know, when you need a train to come and bring the butler down to the back door, now we're down here, it's probably going to take forever for the butler to come and let us in. Mm. So, meanwhile, why don't we go through a couple of news items?
Yeah, well, let's do one that's interesting this week. In fact, our good friend of the podcast and all-time good guy, Matt Hall.
We're not worthy! We're not worthy!
Has touched the water in Windsor.
Oh, no!
And he's out of the race.
Oh, man. Look, I've seen the video. It's like ATC Ben was saying, it's proof that Matt Hall can walk on water. It's just amazing. I don't know if he walks, but his plane definitely walked across that water. That was a very shocking-looking effect.
It's obviously a much more competitive season this year. We saw Addison Kindleman in Perth in almost identical circumstances, except for one thing, and that's, of course, that he didn't fly away from this one, where he sort of pulled around into a very tight turn, G-stalled, and in he went. And yep. Matt Hall, I tell you what, he's very, very lucky. I don't know how many of the listeners might have seen the footage from the Red Bull Air Race up there in Windsor, Canada, but yeah, very, very lucky. Touched the water, level it out, dragged the tailwheel through the water before firewalling that throttle and letting that rather powerful engine just pull him out and off to safety. Obviously went off the course and was checked out by Jörg Fleischmann, the Red Bull Air Race helicopter pilot first, who sort of flew underneath and had a bit of a look. And then later on, Nigel Lamb also went up and inspected the plane. He declared an emergency and landed with a full complement of emergency services waiting for him. But Matt, being the true professional that he is, managed to bring the plane in safely. Grant, here's a bit of an audio clip of what he had to say just after the race.
I felt I was having a fairly good run. Coming around the second lap, I've typically become slow in that last quarter, so I'd planned to go a little bit harder in that last quarter. I came through the gate 13, I believe it is, with too great an angle to the chicane, and then I broke one of my own rules. I actually looked into the turn, which means I don't fly the aircraft naturally. I pulled on it. I've G-stalled the aircraft, which has rolled me slightly past the knife edge. I've managed to get it back to wings level and recover. I believe I might have skipped twice on the water because I felt two impacts, flew it away, and then obviously it was all just trying just to get it back on the ground safely. Everyone was okay. So, the plane is damaged but will be recoverable. So, from here, our game plan is to just get some rest for me. I'm sure it's going to hit me a bit harder in a few hours' time. We'll make a plan for the aircraft and hopefully we'll have everything back on track for the next race in New York.
Cool as a cucumber as always, Grant. I tell you what, those two impacts that he felt was initially his left wingtip touching the water, followed then he levelled it out, and the next impact he felt, by the looks of things, was the rear half of the aircraft touching the water.
Yeah, it was the tailwheel and also the main gear. It ripped one of his spats off. They couldn't get the helicopter too close. He was able to look at him, but couldn't get as close as Nigel could in his MXS because, don't forget, there's a lot of air being blown all around the place by those rotors, so you got to watch out how close the helicopter gets to another aircraft. But Mate, you were saying, you know, yes, we had Kindleman go into the water in Perth, Matt bounce across the water in Windsor. We had Johannes Arc, who's been a world champion in Red Bull. He G-stalled as well, heading towards one of the pylons, and actually took it right on the face. He put his prop right through it and wound up with a chunk of pylon hanging over his left wing and damaged the spade on his left aileron. So that's three G-stalls, major G-stalls, with quite significant results we've had over Perth and this race. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think everyone's definitely pushing it pretty hard.
I'd say they're pushing it 100%, Grant.
Yeah, so, you know, I reckon, do you think, can you hear the butler coming down the corridor?
It looks like they're doing it in a century theme, or actually he's a centurion theme. Let's see what he has to say, Grant.
Strike him, centurion, very awfully.
Struth, he looks like he's in a grumpy mood, mate. Or maybe Max has got the heavies.
Oh, I don't know. Nah, if he's got the heavies, you know what kind of centurion he's going to have.
Oh, hang on, here's another one. Excuse me, sir. Show me into where Max Flight is, please. Ah, that's more like it.
Much better. At last, somebody who understands authority and respects it.
Yes. All right, folks. Well, we're going to go off and join the 100 episodes party. Congratulations to the Airplane Geeks show. Of course, this is only Ausdesk. What do we work out, Grant? About 56, but...
Something like that.
You think they'll throw in a celebration when we get to Ausdesk 100?
I think we'll be lucky if they even include us in the show.
We'll be lucky if they even let us last that long.
But in all seriousness, guys, happy 100. It's been awesome. Thank you for bringing us along for the ride. We've had a blast putting together all these Ausdesks for you, and don't worry, we've got heaps of themes for other ones coming up. Oh yes, indeed.
Yes. That's right, exactly. And what's our bill for doing these Ausdesks? Is it 100 per episode?
100 laughs? 100 pats on the back if we actually make it across there one day?
No, just 100 sound effects per show.
Oh, wow, that'll be cool. That'll keep your whole rig pretty well stacked up, won't it?
Yeah, 100.
There's going to be 20, 30, maybe 100 of those things. And as soon as they know we're here, this place is going to be crawling with them.
Struth, that sounds serious, Grant. We better get out of here.
Yeah, I think so. Let's come on. Hey, did you see that? That looks like an hors d'oeuvre. I'm on it.
Cheers, folks, and we'll see you next week for episode 101.
Yay!
It doesn't quite catch the same punch, does it?
Anyway, Max, where's my beer? I need to mix it with these cold and flu tablets.
You'll understand everything after you hear this episode.
Yeah, baby. Kick it in, man. Freebase those tablets, man.
Oh, those guys are brilliant.
Max, yeah. you realize that the apprentice has clearly surpassed the master.
Yeah, absolutely. No question
about
it.
Their production value is just so much better than we were ever able to.
Yeah, it's very high. And in fact, I think they're kind of in the process of leveraging that into some other opportunities.
Great.
I got to say a couple things. First, if you haven't seen that YouTube clip of Matt Hall,
I just watched it.
Because that's incredible.
It is incredible.
Him touching the water?
Yeah.
He didn't touch the water. He hit the water.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to recover from that, wow. But secondly, I mean, I just want to thank Grant and Steve because just from my end, I have learned so much about the airlines in that region because of that segment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been fun.
Yeah, and we've said it before that you don't have to be from Australia or that region in order to enjoy their podcast, PlaneCrazyDownUnder.com. Check it out.
Can you imagine flying Tiger Airways?
Well, the closest thing would be Spirit now with the pre-reclined seats and 28-inch seat pitch.
He got seat pitch
in. There you go. He got seat pitch in.
Pre-reclined.
Way to go.
The only thing that annoys me about that story, though, Air France doing the same thing, getting none of the flack for it.
They're doing the same.
But granted, only within France, so it's a short stage length, and they've been actually increasing legroom because of it, but whatever.
Spirit loves the flack, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course they do.
Flight blogger John Ostrower here. From one aviation geek to another, congratulations, guys, on 100 terrific episodes. Keep up the great work.
Moving on to the listener mail, we got a voicemail from Steven.
Hey, guys, this is Steven out in California. Just listened to episode 99 on my way to work at 4 in the morning. Just wanted to touch on two quick things because I'm not done with the episode. I had to pause it before I lost my train of thought. One, going back to the social media part with Rob talking about that the RAA, about 3 weeks ago, JetBlue had its senior meeting with senior board members and members of the company. And during that, they also had a live feed on Twitter where people could use a hashtag and the public could chime in and put positive comments or negative. I like this about the company. I like that about, you know, I don't like this about the company. I like that about the company. You know, give them ideas, you know, anything and everything. And they had it going for probably about 7 hours during the day. And there were some JetBlue employees who were tweeting, you know, to for the public to, hey, you know, if you fly JetBlue, give them your feedback sort of thing, which I think, you know, in this day and age is extremely valuable for information for the company. It's coming directly from their customers. You know, and Twitter is a huge social media thing, you know, modern day tool to be used by airlines. Second thing, as far as David Vanderhoof's comment about the Andrews Air Force Base being the only air show in the U.S. that shuttles people to the air show, that is actually incorrect. Nellis Air Force Base has off-site parking. I've been to that show 3 times in the last 8 years, and after 9/11, they do off-site shuttle just like Andrews, where you you park just north of the base, I believe, near a I don't know if it's a dirt bike park or something like that. It's a lot of parking. It might be a speedway up there. And then you screening, they hand wand, you know, you go through the metal detector, then they hand wand you, they search your bag. You go over, stand in line, jump on a bus. After 5 minutes, they let you off the air show, and there you go. And the same thing at the end of the air show. So anyway, yeah, those are the two quick things. I'll let you guys go, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, great comments from Steven.
I didn't say they were the only ones that did it. I said they were really good at doing it.
I thought you said they were the only ones. I remembered it the same way. But then,
well,
maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe we need to go back and listen to the tape again.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
Yeah, right but, now, but let's go back to the
right
instant replay.
Voted to one.
I'm like a certain umpire this past week.
You know, this is the new media age, David. So, like, with Wikipedia, it doesn't matter what the truth is. It's how many people believe what other people say.
Yes, good point.
Fair point.
All right, well, we need to wrap this up because we've gone on quite long. We did receive...
Oh,
yeah, I know, it's hard to...
I cut liberally, Max.
Yeah, yeah, you can count on it. We did receive a number of other emails from some listeners and want to thank them. We're going to sort of have to move forward, but we really enjoy the comments. We got some really good stuff in. A lot of those are posted in the comments section on the webpage, so you can find them there.
Did you ever notice we never get any comments from any women? Did you ever notice that?
So all you women out there, all three of you, if you would like to send in some comments, make sure that you do that and make Rob happy. In the meantime,
yes, it doesn't take
or
much
if you want to date me.
No, it's not. We've been down that road before.
That didn't work, Dan.
No, it didn't work.
We tried. We
trust
solicited.
Me, if they're going to make me happy, you're not going to want to date them, Dan. Trust me.
Ooh.
No, I just wanted to mention a couple of things in closing. One is that, you know, a lot of times it gets cut out, but there's always a lot of emphasis on being properly hydrated before the show starts. And I kind of reached back and tried to look for some examples, and I found this.
Okay. Colossal amounts of useless knowledge.
All right. Psyched. I'm psyched. All right. I'm psyched. Wait, I've got to hydrate.
Trying to play Dan.
I'm at peace with the world.
This is going to be a good one. So that's how Rob gets ready to the podcast. Another theme that recurs quite often, more than people might realize, is sort of stray noises on the podcast. They're usually associated with Rob.
I know who that is.
Hey, I hear a lot of heavy breathing. Is that coming from you, Rob?
You've got one heck of a sensitive mic.
Well, I gotta breathe.
But the forest.
What is it? Skywalker.
Darth Mark.
Sorry, I didn't realize I was. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was breathing again.
No, breathing's okay.
I'll knock it off.
Quietly.
It's still better than clipping your nails.
Yeah. Rob comes through with more sounds. Who needs Steve Fisher when you got Rob? So, Rob, thank you for all the entertainment, particularly the fingernail clipping along the way.
Rob, I dub you Captain Outtake.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, Rob, there wouldn't be many outtakes. But Dan, you're working hard and you're coming up and you had quite a few.
That's why I say I'm scared. With if Rob got two clips, what's coming for me?
Yeah. Well, Rob is the outtake master.
And I don't even try. That's the key.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's our show for this episode. Let's see. Self-promotion. David Vanderhoof, where can people find you online?
They can find me on Plane Crazy Down Under. They can find me on the Airplane Geeks podcast. They can find me on whatjustflewby.com, which is my blog, or you can tweet me at Twitter at DM Vanderhoof.
And how about you, Dan Webb?
Well, you can actually find me in Washington, D.C.
That's true for the next few months. Anyway.
Just walk down the street and yell his name.
Yep.
Sleeping right on top of the Lincoln Memorial.
Right in Abe Lincoln's lap. I think that was actually, wasn't that part of the movie Thank You for Smoking?
Can't you get arrested for that?
Most likely, yes. So I will not be doing that. Other than that, you can find my blog, thingsinthesky.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Dan Wedge. But seriously, if there are any listeners out in the D.C. area, you know, drop me a line. Hopefully we can meet up at some time.
You don't have a car out there, do you?
No, but the Metro is awesome.
Yeah, right. But, yeah. You know, listeners equals car equals ride. There you go.
True. I'm feeling a tweet up at Gravely Point to go, or Gravely, however the hell you say it. Whatever. The place where you can watch the airplanes land.
Sounds like
Courtney, that's who he is. He's Captain Mispronunciation.
Yeah, that's right.
True.
Rob Mark.
Our own little George Bush.
I gotta say, I'm just shocked that I skated by with no incriminating sound clips played during the entire episode. So,
well, that's because Max figures there would be enough you'd automatically do. He wouldn't have to splice.
That's right. They're self-generating throughout the episode. Rob, where can people find you online?
Well, you know what? They can find me at jetwine.com. They can find me on Twitter at jetwine, or they can find me doing what I'm doing right now, which is looking at the What Just Flew By blog and this part where David has the shot of all the babes on the Jeep. I didn't see that one before. That's kind of neat, David. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. I'm being very shallow again, aren't I? I'm sorry.
David, your hits just went up. And Courtney Miller, is there any place where you'd like people to find you online?
I'm still on Twitter, Miller22. You know, any email, really, just go ahead and send it to the Geeks at Airplane Geeks, and Max sends that on. Or LinkedIn, of course, you can find me on LinkedIn. And if anybody's interested in maybe purchasing a new production 130-seat, low fuel burn, high-efficiency aircraft, just go ahead and give me your buzz.
Yeah, do that. Please do that.
I'll set you up.
No, Courtney.
What does the C stand for in C series?
Courtney.
Courtney, I knew it.
Excellent.
Courtney, good thing that this isn't a video podcast, because I believe the last time your wife interrupted a podcast, bad things happened.
Yeah, that's a whole different story. And yeah, I'll tell you guys that later.
Yeah. We'll want to hear all about that in the after show.
Thanks for coming back, Court.
Yeah, I really appreciate you joining us.
Guys.
And I'm Max Flight. You can find me at 30,000feet.com. And I'm also on Twitter at Max Flight. See airplanegeeks.com for show notes and also those great listener comments. You can follow us on Twitter at Airplane Geeks or send your email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And you can also see our fan page on Facebook. Just search for Airplane Geeks. You can also leave a message on our listener line. We love getting those.
And if you want to call the Airplane Geeks, you can dial 361-GEEKS01.
And thank you, Benet. All right. Join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast 101. Good night, everybody.
100 down and a bunch to go.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.
this is Matt Jolly from Warbird Radio Live, home on warbirdradio.com. I want to thank the Airplane Geeks. You guys are doing a great job, and man, congratulations on your big 100th episode. I hope it's ever been as self-gratified as possible. You guys deserve it. You're doing a great job, and keep up the good work.
Good afternoon, our fellow friends at the Airplane Geeks podcast. You know what they say in show business, never work with kids or animals. Well, this is why.
Dateline, August 30th, 2009. G'day, folks. I'm Steve Fisher. And I'm Grant McCarran. What do I have to talk about this week, Grant? Nothing. Steve Greedy didn't write. Steve Greedy didn't write anything. Oh, okay.
And with that, the prosecution rests its case.
All right. With that, I think we'll move on to some other stuff.
No. We haven't even started crying yet. We can go on this for another hour or so.
No, yeah, but no one will be
listening. I want tears before we move on.